thanks to everyone's efforts, our retreat has started off very well indeed. We've never done the one-on-one quite this way before. It's taking longer than we expected, but that's okay. We'll just take more sitting periods to give everyone a chance as necessary. At any time during the Zazen, if you feel the need, you can also do one-on-one by quietly standing up during the Zazen, walking over, bowing to me. I will bow to you. Then you can follow me out of the room to the one-on-one. I trust you have all tasted, experienced for yourself from last night, sitting through the night this morning. Taste it for yourself. Come to know through your own experience that there is nothing to attain. For the seeking, grasping self, there are endless things to attain or to escape from. In a word, that is samsara. It is samsara, dis-ease, distress, because the self cannot come fully to rest in what it seeks. To some extent, we all already know this, and yet we continue to seek. Through your own experience and insight, I trust you have seen directly that there is nothing to attain. And truly, decisively, conclusively, completely attaining that, strange as it sounds, is what Buddhism is all about, Buddhist practice. Not the intellectual knowledge, the idea, or even the feeling or sentiment. But actually knowing through experience the ending of this self that endlessly seeks to come home to the fact that there is nothing to attain. Once again, especially in Zen, to decisively attain, for lack of a better word, realize that fact in our bones, to embody it. For some of you, you have some sense of this fact. There is nothing to attain. Yes. The very seeking, the very attempt to attain it is itself part of the dis-ease. It is itself a profound symptom of the self not able to come to rest. To some extent, some of you have already seen through this fact. And yet, at the same time, your seeking mind continues to function. And you are aware of this, which is important. You see that fact. There is nothing to attain. And yet, this urge, this samsaric condition, the self's dis-ease still is functioning. There's still that pulse, there's still that urge. Natural enough. It's been going on for how many years now? So, a delicate but very important part of the real practice is to see that and to allow it to come to rest, to come to its own end. Zazen, of course, is one very good way to do that. The posture, whether or not you sit in full lotus or not, but the posture itself is the expression, it's the embodiment of the self's coming to an end. We are not seeking anything. We're not trying to go anywhere with our legs. It's clear whether we're sitting in a chair or our legs are up like this. Whether our hands are in the half moon, like this, or just like this. We are not grasping on to anything. Our hands have come to rest. Back is naturally erect. Head is straight, so that we can maintain focus, clarity, concentration, and yet not put undue, unnecessary strain on our body. This posture itself, through centuries of trial and error, working it out, is itself a kind of expression of that fact. Of course, just to take that posture doesn't mean that we have arrived at the end, but it is a very helpful process, a very helpful method. It is helping to put the body and thus the mind to rest. Clear, focused, alert, and yet relaxed. A certain healthy tension. Alertness, sharpness, clarity, not fuzzy, not dreamy. This is all involved in the posture and of course also the mental attitude that we take when we sit properly. And yet, you have experience for yourself. Okay, I know that, but I'm still... Even if I'm sitting like that perfectly with that, what were you talking about last night? That lotus flower sitting there and it's all perfect. By the way, it also said he was doing this for, you know, millions of kotis of kalpas. You know, We're doing a couple of days here, which can seem like an awfully long time, I know. But you know how those sutras are. He was doing this for, you know, low jhanas of, you know, and that means for each grain of the sand, you know, each grain of sand of the Ganges River, if that is a million, million, million years, then when all of those sands have come to, maybe that's one kalpa. Well, he did it for a bunch of those. Long time ago. Long time. Long time. It wasn't that he didn't sit long enough. Or well enough. It makes it very clear in the Lotus Sutra. This Buddha of penetrating wisdom, even his name, right? Penetrating wisdom Buddha. He's a Buddha of penetrating wisdom. He sat perfectly on the lotus seat. In other words, all the right conditions. Full lotus. Completely at rest in body and mind. Completely silent in body and mind. For a very long time. And yet, to continue from last night, it goes on to say in the Lotus Sutra, seated on that wisdom throne, having already destroyed the army of Mara, all delusions wiped away, this Buddha of penetrating wisdom. He was just about to attain perfect, complete enlightenment. But, the Lotus Sutra goes on to say, the Buddha Dharma, the living truth of Buddha, the Buddha Dharma was not revealed to him. Again, continuing the Lotus Sutra, he sat in perfect full lotus posture, motionless in body and in mind, but the Buddha Dharma was not revealed to him. Well, what about this? Is this perhaps your situation? Are you sitting the best that you can? Angels can do no better. On your lotus throne, perhaps going through many different stages and states of mind, sleepiness, great wakefulness. Do you see what the Lotus Sutra is saying? He sat, he got all the conditions right. Perfect. All of the things were checked off. You know? Posture, mind, the army of illusions wiped out. Everything. For millions of kalpas. For endless period of time. And yet, the Buddha Dharma, the truth, was not revealed to him. What about this? What about you? Is this, in some sense, your question? Your situation, your doubt? If not, what is? In Zen, there are expressions like, get the question clear, and you're close to the answer, or close to the solution. Get your question clear. The question, the doubt that you are. Clear. Again, this has very much to do with zazen. Not just sitting there in a state of samadhi, concentrated oneness. But being perfectly clear, is there something lacking? Is there some question, some doubt? If there is, making it perfectly clear. Why? Because, in a sense, that's 90% or 99% of the way to the real solution. By making the question, the doubt, what is lacking for me? Being crystal clear about that is coming right to the edge. Coming right to the edge. Then the answer, the solution, so to speak, can't help but come upon you eventually. Do you see? In a sense, you are plowing the way, making the path, right effort, correct effort. Of course, to speak about it as a solution or an answer, it's not like the number seven, that's it. It's not that kind of thing, of course, but the ending of the question, the ending of the self that is stuck, the ending of dis-ease. Once again, to get the question, your own living doubt, the doubt that you are, to get that clear, you're close to the answer. You're right on top of it. Again, not the Buddha of penetrating wisdom, not his question, although it may stir something in you, but of course, your living, breathing question. The question that you are. You see, when I phrase it that way, it's obvious. It can't be somebody else's, right, question. It's the doubt that you are. So you can't pick that out of a book, although some phrase may help to ignite it, bring it to life in you. But that is not your doubt. That is not the doubt that you are. Again, it can help to ignite it, huh? To spark it. Again, get the question clear and you're close to the answer. I would translate this Zen phrase. Get the question clear and you're right on top of the answer. It's right there. The question, or even the sitting itself, if that is your question, your way of doubting or questioning, the sitting, Zazen itself, becomes you. You sense this, don't you, since last night? Sitting hour after hour, sometimes painful, sometimes sleepy. But at the same time, the sitting is becoming you, what you are. You are becoming the sitting. They are inseparable, even though some pain, some sleepiness, mind wanders sometimes. And yet, through all of that, it's starting to become clear, isn't it? Again, not because I say so, but through your own, perhaps struggling, but experience, through your own experience. The question, or the sitting itself, becomes you. You become the sitting itself. There is where self-delusion, the delusion of self, ends. Otherwise, you already sense, don't you? Otherwise, it is an endless cycle of chasing after your own tail, right? You know how a cat chases its tail? We're putting something out there, chasing after it. Maybe we get a little nibble once in a while, but of course it doesn't satisfy us, so we run around and around. And then we wonder why we get sleepy and zazen. That's samsara. That's what I call mental masturbation. Again, to use a rather dramatic Zen metaphor, I don't know why Han, but maybe it's, I don't think so. I don't think it's the American in me. But the metaphors that I bring for this retreat, a lot of military stuff. Yeah. I guess because it's a peace school, I don't know. But I hope you will take these metaphors correctly and properly. It's a Japanese sentiment, so it has a bit of that martial art to it. It's actually a waka poem, a Japanese waka poem. It goes something like this. It's using the metaphor of a bow and arrow, right? Using a bow and an arrow to attack, to kill your prey, the enemy, to slay the all of the Mara delusions. Huh? With bow, you know, the bow and then the arrows. Huh? With bow broken and arrows exhausted, all used up, okay? So the enemy is coming at you, you're using your arrows, shooting, eventually the bow itself is broken, it's useless, and you don't have any arrows left. So again, with bow broken, Westerners often interpret this as with back broken because of the pain of sitting in zazen, but it doesn't just mean that, but if it works for you. With bow broken, and arrows exhausted, completely exhausted. There! Shoot. Shoot with your whole being. That's what we do in zazen. That's what we do with the koan. And you can see, can't you, why this kind of extremity is necessary. To make it clear, as long as the self maintains its delusion, has one more arrow left in its quiver, huh? One more thing that it can do, it will do it. And the illusion, it will keep chasing its tail. On and on and on. You already know this is pointless, and yet it's not always so easy to drop that. You can see it doesn't work, and yet you've run in those tracks so long that it's almost like you're still running in them and you're saying, yeah, this doesn't work, but the sheer force of the habit, you're running around the track saying, this is a bunch of bullshit, and yet you're still just running around in it. So, of course, something like Zen meditation, zazen, it's not the only way, but it's a very effective way to put that to an end. Otherwise, we can sit and think about putting it to an end, maybe even go faster as a result, because we think we now see it as some kind of an end, but actually we're still going around. So again, zazen is a very effective way, proper zazen, to bring that whole habit energy, that whole useless waste of energy, just to dissolve And then, as I spoke last night, with all of the energy gathered into one, no extras, supernatural power, simply the energy that has been wasted now, here, gathered all into one. With your bow broken and your arrows all exhausted, anything left for the self to shoot at? No more ideas, no more good ways to go. It's all been blocked off. There is where we shoot ourselves with our whole being. And again, you can see why it's necessary for the self to come to that extremity, because the self wants to make a difference, right? It wants to make a change, maybe make things better. But we already know that simply, maybe we're widening the circle a little bit, or making it a little, sure, making it into an oval. How about a square, everyone? Do you like that? Triangle? But it's still the simple movement, a symptom of the dis-ease itself. You see? So, in actual practice, in our actual moment-to-moment practice, to see that and to recognize to our bone, self wants to make a change. We want to improve the situation. We want to make a difference. And yet, in what we are doing in a retreat, if I may use the term, in the religious world, self can't make a difference. Or even more directly, self doesn't make a difference. That difference is an illusion that the self maintains to maintain itself. That is samsara. That is the dis-ease of the illusion itself. The self-delusion. So, I urge you, this is a peace school. After the retreat, certainly go back to the world, go back to your family, go back to your work, go back to your loved ones, go back to your enemies if you have any. And work this out, and in that sense, make a difference. But that's not our work here, in this retreat. Our work here is to make clear that the self does not make a difference. The self cannot make a difference. It constantly is, dividing things into two and then wondering, why can't I become one? Again, in the religious world, in the context of this retreat, the point is not to make a difference, to improve our social interactions. I would hope that will happen as a result of this retreat. But that's not our motivation. That's not what we are focused on here in this retreat. It's something much simpler, much more fundamental. In, if I may use the word, the religious world, if you want, the Zen world, every way must be done away with. Do you understand? All of the ways, the means, the methods of the self must be done away with, gotten rid of, because they're simply the continuation of samsara, of the illusion. In the religious world, or in the Zen world, if you like, every way must be done away with. Or it can get in the way. Rather than become a way, it gets in the way. It becomes an obstacle to what we really are. In the depths of your zazen here and now, in the depths of your zazen, however deep it is. It's not deep enough. In the depths of your zazen, however deep it is, right here and right now. In the depths of this zazen, there cannot even be zazen, let alone some kind of illusion or enlightenment. In the depths of this real, living zazen, there cannot even be a hint or a trace of zazen, let alone some kind of illusion or enlightenment. That is zazen. And I think you all, to some extent, have tasted that already. So now it's not to improve it, make it better, become more powerful as a result, no, but simply to settle into that fact completely. And again, not some fact out there, but the fundamental fact that we are, what we are at bottom. Right here, right now, not in some deep underworld. What we really are at bottom, right here, right now. Now, what about this Buddha of penetrating wisdom? By the way, his name in Japanese is Daitsu Chisho Buddha. But that's something like the Buddha of penetrating wisdom. What about this? What about this? What about you? What about you? Shall we take a minute to stand up and stretch if anyone would like to, please? Well, we have a little less than 2 days left. But that's kalpas, if we use it well. Sit in your zazen. Sit, simply sit until nothing remains. Sit until there's nothing left. Sit till there is nothing to attain. You already know, don't you, the discursive mind, discriminating consciousness. It's endlessly measuring, evaluating, separating, distinguishing, huh? Of course, this has its place in the world. But not here. Here, we cut, as the Zen expression says, we cut all things into one, not two. We cut all things into one. Why? Because dividing in two, how can we arrive at one? Arriving at one, we then let even that go. But if we are still dividing into two, what I am and what I want to be, how far I am and how far I should be, how deep my depth is, and then we wonder why we can't constantly be the one that we are. Zazen is not simply sitting there with our discriminating consciousness. It's the awareness of that which discriminates. Do you see why I use that strange metaphor of John Paul Jones? I have not yet begun to fight a very determined, good Scottish. Actually, he was Scottish by birth. I have not yet begun to fight. That's not what we're trying to do. We're not trying to barrel ass our way into nirvana here. Rather, to realize that which has not yet begun to fight. That which has not yet divided into two. That. Gautama Buddha, when he was sitting under the Bodhi tree, at least in later, very popular Chinese Buddhist writing, Gautama Buddha supposedly says to himself, skin, flesh, and marrow, you know, the liquid in the bones, skin, flesh, and marrow, may dry up in my body, but without complete awakening, I will not move from this seat. Obviously the lotus seat. The lotus seat. Once again, according to the later Chinese Buddhist tradition, when Gautama Buddha was sitting under the Bodhi tree, just before he did awaken, he's supposed to have said to himself, without complete awakening, even if my skin, my flesh and my marrow dry up in my body, I will not budge, I will not move an inch from this seat. This is easy to misunderstand. It sounds like a tremendous effort of the will, but that's not what it is. He got up, he must have, he had a body, he got up to go to the bathroom sometimes. It doesn't mean that you can't get up from this posture. It means that even when you do get up, break the posture to go to the bathroom, to go for a meal, to go for a walk, to go for a rest. Even when you do that, you are not stopping your practice. That's what he's really intending. It is that kind of determination, not this kind of, I'm not moving into... You can see how fruitless that was. That was what he came to before, and he realized he was killing himself, not getting enlightened. So he decided to take nourishment, bathe in the river, refresh himself, and then he sat down and said this. But you see how easy it is to misunderstand that it is some kind of willful determination. It's much more basic than that. It's saying, from now on, whatever I do, I will not budge from this seat. Do you see? I cannot budge from this seat. Whether I'm driving my car, working, talking with my friends, getting in an argument. But I cannot budge from this seat. That's how free this seat is. Do you see? It's not a matter of just sitting in a certain posture and being very, very stubborn. What did Gautama Buddha awaken to? What did he awaken to? It is none other than what we here and now awaken to. No more, no less. Does anyone have any questions from out of the practice that rather than raise in one-on-one, it might be best to raise together for everyone? Some questions are pretty much everyone's question or many people's question. So it's a kind of a waste just to go through it, the two of us. Is there some question that you want to raise for everyone? Yes.
I have a question about effort. I have heard what you said, but I understand. I find myself sometimes, it's like you said yesterday, like using the will to try and get on the inside. And then that very use of will becomes the obstacle.
Yes.
So then I tried just sitting here. That sometimes that seems a bit, that's the other side of the duality sort of thing. It's a bit flip. So, the only thing I know is doing, what did you say? Barrel-ass? I've never heard that before. Barrel-ass.
Sorry, it's an Americanism.
That's a very vivid. I feel like I keep...
A big car barrel-ass is down the road.
I keep struggling with my own failures. If I can hang in there, then the failure... Well, I suppose it's what you said about bone breaking, but it takes a long time. It seems to slip bit by bit. You can say anything to that.
Well, you're quite correct. You know, there is a place for determination and will. I mean, we would not be here if you didn't have any determination, right? You've all made plans, preparations, all kinds of things to come here, and now you're dealing with your passing fancies. You know, all those things that are going on in your mind, you had made up this great commitment to come here, and you had some vision perhaps of what was going to happen, and then all of a sudden you find yourself slobbering and half asleep and dreaming about something 3 weeks ago. So yes, there is a place for effort, for determination. If we simply sit there and twiddle our thumbs, right, that will not do. The danger is when it becomes wrong effort. It becomes the will trying to will itself into enlightenment, something like that. the will, the effort of the will trying to stop itself, to pull itself up by its own bootstraps. The very effort is maintaining the illusion, right? Another simple example is when you are trying to focus and then you find yourself, your mind wandering, instead of simply bringing it back when you realize it, you start engaging in a dialogue with yourself about your mind having wandered, right? My mind shouldn't wander. I've been sitting for 3 years now. Geez, Jeff must be saying something wrong. Well, of course, this is just continuing that whole process of the mind wandering, right? So, you don't have to be happy if your mind wandered, but you don't have to get angry about it either. That's just more mind wandering. You simply bring it back. And that is a kind of a effort, kind of a right effort, kind of a determination. So, Bruce, I would focus on what I call right effort, which is not mere willpower. Proper effort, which is certainly not, as you already sense and have suggested, it's not simply sitting there twiddling our thumbs, right? Oh, well, then I have to stop trying. Well, that's just another, that's kind of negative effort, right? I'm not going to try and do anything. Okay. That's just going backwards instead of forwards when the point is to stop. So, you're quite right. It will not do to simply barrel ass through with our will and our effort. But it will not do simply to say, well, okay, I'm going to fuck it. Let the guy next to me do it. I'm just gonna sit here and keep relaxed and not try too hard. Which is, of course, trying somewhat, but not too much. You've already suggested, Bruce, that you see neither of those will do, huh? Neither of those will do. Right effort is what I was trying to say about sitting, as Gautama Buddha did, and, if I may use the word, resolve not to get up until you have come to the end of yourself. And again, that doesn't mean you can't get up from your cushion. You're not allowed to have lunch until you're enlightened. It doesn't mean that. It means the resolve to continue on this path until the end, no matter what, in whatever you are doing. Of course, when you get up as well. It also means, Bruce, when you are confused and frustrated, right? The best that you can, maintaining your practice there. If you're confused, don't be confused about it, right? If you're confused, see that. Recognize it. That is your practice of the moment. That is your practice in the confusion. It's often not very pleasant, but if that's where you are, be there. Be there. Don't divide. Don't separate yourself from it. That's the real wasted energy. That's the real wrong effort. If you're confused, be a confused Buddha. But it's not a matter of simply giving up on the effort and not trying, but putting the effort in the correct place. I would say it's not, of course, going outward, but it's not really going inward either. It's going seeing through where that division comes from in the first place. Right there. And Bruce, you know, right? It's always right here and right now what we're talking about. It's never something that we will attain someday as a result of some superhuman effort. What we are seeking to attain is to be right here, right now, without anything else. Do you see what I mean? this, right here, right now, this is nirvana. Pain in the legs and all, sleepiness and all. If we see through that fact. And I'm not an eye doctor to decide whether you had 20/20 vision when you saw it or not. When you see through that fact, it's unmistakable. No one can take that away from you. No one can give that to you either. But from there, the very struggle that you speak of is transformed. Do you know what I mean, Bruce? That back and forth seesawing. Distress becomes itself the manifestation of the way.
Well, my experience is that it feels like something happens from out of the blue to me. It's not something I can engineer. So in some ways it's very frustrating sitting and sitting and sitting. It's when those accidents happen from out of the blue, and then suddenly something unravels, you don't even know that it's there. Well,
it's very interesting because many people in the West don't realize, Zen practitioners in the West, that no genuine awakening has ever occurred simply in sitting. Nobody. Nobody has had a profound awakening sitting in meditation. Who has? Look at the records. Even according to the Zen tradition, Gautama Buddha, right? He was sitting in meditation, but according to the Zen tradition, he looked up and he saw the morning star. He saw himself. Right? According to the Zen tradition. It wasn't simply... You'll never get there that way. That's right. It doesn't mean that that's useless. Not at all. You know, it's like saying, well, if I plow the fields and I dig and I put the seeds in, but that's not the food, right? Well, no, it's not, but if you don't plow the field and you don't put the seed in and you don't take care with the water and, no, that's not the food. You're right. It's not a direct cause and effect. I do this and there it is. No, it takes conditions in that sense, relatively speaking. But that's not to say the practice is useless, not at all. But to do it with the right effort. In other words, not to do it in order to get something. To do it so purely that there can be no room to think about, am I going to get it? Am I closer? Do you see what I mean? That itself is wrong effort. To give yourself so completely to the practice. The practice of the moment, the sitting practice of the moment, that there can be no room for such things. Even Dogen, right? Dogen was also sitting in meditation, but he wasn't just sitting there and getting awakened, as he himself admits. The guy next to him fell asleep. It was late at night, almost midnight, and the master saw this, came over, he was an old master, and he picked up the sandal of the monk who had fallen asleep, and he started hitting him, saying, the practice of Zazen is body and mind dropped off. How can you sit here sleeping? And with that guy didn't get it. But Dogen, body and mind fell. There is no event. It can happen when you see how it really works. It can happen that simply sitting in meditation causes enlightenment. Do you see, Bruce, what this has to do with this Daitsu Chisho Buddha? This Buddha ball. That's precisely what they're saying. He did it all. For a million kalpas. Forever. You'll never do that. He's beyond you. He's also a Buddha, by the way, but anyway. But he didn't attain it. Do you see, you're standing on thin ice, but you're standing right where he's talking. Which is not to say, well, therefore, let's all just go out and have a walk. No. It becomes even more important to practice properly, which means not to do it, in a sense, for any purpose at all. If you have any intent to become a Buddha, your practice is not yet pure. Do you see what I mean? That doesn't mean that then you stop sitting. That means you sit even harder. You sit even more completely.
That's what's so hard, isn't it?
Yes,
it's like you're journeying into hopelessness. That's exactly what that thing about the arrows. All your arrows are broken.
Yes.
Every strategy you've ever invented to survive as an ego is beginning to bite the dust. That's to an ego. That's hell.
Yep. And are you willing to go there?
I have no choice, really.
Well, then why are we having this discussion?
It's an evil thing.
Well, it's about a quarter after. Do we have a little tea break now, I think? Yeah. So, thank you, Bruce, for your question. I think to some extent everyone is struggling with the same thing. So I think everyone appreciates your raising it for us. In a sense, it's everyone's question. But do you have some sense of?
Yeah.
That's right. I never said it was easy. Never said it was hard either. But as long as you don't play with that. You see what you can do with that then. Oh, and how much more. You can suffer about your suffering if you want, or you can come to the end of your suffering.
I use my heart. There is a force in my heart. At that point, it helps. It comes to me, and I'm going towards my heart. I can't explain it in English very well, but there's a lot of caring from your heart, a lot of power in your heart. And when you lose your ego, then you meet your heart. And your heart goes wider beyond you. That's my experience.
Thank you for your comments and your questions and for listening so intently.